SeatGeek is the newest sponsor of Off the Ball Network. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a 99.9% chance you love sports. But watching these games in person is super expensive. To help ease the pain in your wallet, use the promo code OffTheBallNetwork to get a $20 discount for first-time users of SeatGeek. Your next best night ever is waiting, and SeatGeek has the tickets. The Up and Under podcast is proud to be a part of Off the Ball Network. For all things basketball, football, soccer, golf, baseball, sports betting, you name it, go to offtheballnetwork.com and check out the amazing articles posted by writers of the network, including yours truly, and the other podcasts on basically every sport under the sun. Off the Ball Network, your home for quality sports and entertainment content.
I'm ready when y'all are, I guess.
All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, whatever. What is good, everybody? It's your boy Francis Carlotta on episode 47 of the Up and Under podcast. Today we'll deviate slightly from the most interesting teams in the NBA to the most interesting teams to land arguably the best NBA draft prospect of all time, Memphis's DeAndre Williams. No, I'm just kidding. Of course I'm talking about Victor Wembanyama. But before that, we'll give a nod to the sound of music and talk about our favorite things about the NBA season. But before that, it's like, but wait, there's more. I got to talk about who's on the pod with me. Unfortunately, no Connor Byrne as he grinds away at Duke Business School, so all the best to Connor. But I am joined by Grant Hechinger, a man who is on record saying Francis Carlotta is the best real-life basketball player he has ever had the pleasure of teaming up with. And before I go further, I just want to say thank you, Grant. You know, when I saw the notification pop up on my phone that you made this quote, it just went viral across the internet. I mean, I just couldn't say anything else but thank you. It means a lot. I didn't expect you to say something so kind about me. But I really appreciate that, Grant, so thank you again. But we're also joined by a man who truly believes who needs Victor Wembanyama when you have Lauri Markkanen, right? Kenneth Cotterill of the Competitive Edge podcast, making his record-setting third appearance on the pod. Isn't that what you've been saying for a while? Like, Lauri Markkanen is Victor Wembanyama. Like, who needs him, right? Because he's been pretty fantastic.
I don't know if I've gone that far, but I will say that we did Lauri Markkanen Appreciation Day at the Off the Ball Network on Friday. And Friday night, Lauri Markkanen's stat line was 27-12-4. So I'm not taking credit for the fact that he went off, but I just see a little bit of a correlation there that perhaps we motivated him to have a monster night. Unfortunately, it came against my LA Lakers, but they're a dumpster fire anyways. So, Grant, Francis, Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, glad to have
absolutely.
You, Kenneth.
Grant, how are you doing?
I'm good. Lauri Markkanen has been like a mix of Larry Bird and like Gerald Green so far. So it's been really fun to watch. I wasn't aware of that viral message I sent you. I must have gotten hacked. It's pretty cliche to say you got hacked at this point in time, but yeah. So I'm not going to claim it, but maybe that happened. And also, I have literally in my notes, I have another somewhat similar Memphis Tigers joke written down to that DeAndre Williams you just
oh,
made.
Good.
So you'll get, nice. That's a preview. You'll get something later, a little tease for you.
Fantastic. All right, so let's talk about our favorite things going on in the NBA season so far. We're almost at the 10-game mark last time I checked. Most teams have played 9, maybe even 10 games by now. But yeah, we're definitely going into the season, and I'll just start with the record-setting 3-time guest appearance on the podcast. Kenneth, what's been one of your favorite things to happen in the NBA season so far?
I gotta say, one of my favorite things has actually been seeing a few games of what this Pelicans team could potentially be this year. Because I think when you look at that starting five especially, I think it rivals almost every team in the league. When we're talking about having, you know, Zion and Brandon Ingram, you've got Herb Jones, the second-year guy who's great on the defensive side of the ball. You've got C.J. McCollum there, Jonas Valanciunas as well. I just think that this is a really good team that the Pelicans have, and I think we saw a bit of it last year in the playoffs when they pushed Phoenix as far as they did, and that was without Zion Williamson. So I'm excited to see where the Pelicans go. They're obviously hoping that my team continues to lose every single game possible, because the fact that they have their first round pick next year, it's scary. Like I know we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but can you imagine if the Pelicans land the number one pick? Can you imagine if Victor Wembanyama could go number one to the New Orleans Pelicans? That's downright unfair if that happens, but I'm just excited to see them finally. You know, they went through those years with Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday, and they were okay, they pretty good team, but they weren't ever going to scare anybody. And now it looks like they went through a proper rebuild. They drafted well, obviously took advantage of the Lakers getting a guy like Brandon Ingram back in that Anthony Davis trade, and I think we're seeing that now, that what this team could potentially do this year.
Yeah, the Pelicans have first of all, before I talk about the Pelicans, they're 7th in net rating, but they're 5-4, and it's again, it's like early season, but they're shown they're a really good basketball team, especially like you said, Kenneth, with that starting five. I still have questions about their full depth and their bench, but their starting five is absolutely fantastic. And you know, they've had some close losses, you know, lost to the Lakers in overtime, lost to the Hawks also in overtime yesterday. But they also have some, like, we know how good they are. They beat the Mavericks. Like, they're still a very good basketball team. It's just, I think we're going to be talking about a lot of teams today, and it'll just be more proof of what we've talked about in the past of all the parity in the NBA. Like, there's so many good basketball teams, and I feel like the standings for both the East and the West are going to be so bunched up together, because New Orleans is a very good basketball team. But as it stands right now, they're seventh in the West. You know, it's early, of course. Like, that's, you know, whether or not that stays the same or changes, who knows? It's only been 9-10 games. But my point is, this is a really good basketball team that might finish seventh or sixth or fifth in the West. They might be a play-in team, which is wild. But that just shows how deep the NBA is right now. Grant, what are your thoughts on the Pelicans so far?
Yeah, Pelicans were the first on my list here as well. As a Grizzlies fan, like, it's kind of hard to see these type of teams come out of nowhere in the West End and be like leapfrog other teams into the contender category here. But the Pelicans have done exactly that. I actually have them, you might be a little outdated, I have them sixth in net rating right now at plus 4.9 look after last night's games. Ninth in offense, 10th in defense, so they are balanced. I'm less worried about their depth than you said you were. They have Jose Alvarado. They have Devontae Graham. Namely, they have Trey Murphy. You know how I feel about him. He is one of the top, I don't know, four shooters in the NBA right now, like this very second. And I also saw a chart this morning on him, or just overall chart, plotting players' defensive positional versatility versus how tough their matchups have been, their individual matchups have been. And he was pretty high in both the versatility and the toughness of the matchup there. The three guys right around him were Mikal Bridges, Drew Holiday, and PJ Tucker. So really good company for him to be in there defensively. So I like Trey Murphy a lot, obviously. Love their starting five. And I don't feel like their starting five hasn't even played particularly well. CJ McCollum hasn't shot too well yet. Brandon Ingram's been, you know, fine, but nothing special for his standards at least. And Zion hasn't even reached his potential offensively, and I mean definitely not defensively. I think they have higher expectations for him defensively. He's obviously not been good so far in his career, but they think he can end up being a impactful player on that end. But offensively, even this season, he hasn't been the Zion we've seen of old, and it hasn't really mattered. They're still six in net rating. So yeah, the Pelicans are like here and here to stay, and I think they can get better with the current roster. I think they have as much flexibility to make moves, to make consolidation moves, to improve their roster, whatever they want to do, as any team in the league. So bright future for the Pelicans.
Would the Pelicans be your looking at the standings right now, would they be your favorite to rise up the standings as the season progresses? Or one of your favorites, at least?
I would have them as one of those teams. I mean, we're talking about the fact that already we're only 9 games in. Brandon Ingram had the concussion issue. He missed 5 games. Zion missed a couple there, going up for that dunk and then landing on his tailbone there. So we haven't even really seen them play a lot of games together. And I think that's always been the question with the Pelicans. Yes, it's more so around Zion's health, but just health in general with this team, because anytime you miss a guy that caliber of a Zion Williamson, then it's going to obviously affect your standings. But I look at some of the teams ahead of them, and you know, as much as it's great to talk about Lauri Markkanen in Utah, I don't see them staying in the top 2 in the West this season. Yeah. So I do see them falling. I think Portland will come back down to earth as well. As much as I love Lillard and that a couple of the guys there, I just don't think that they have the depth to stay up there. So I think the Pelicans are going to move up into the top 4 or 5 teams in the West. Whether they can stay there throughout the entire season, as I said, due to health, is yet to be seen. But I think if they are healthy, then this is a scary team to go up against. Like, we didn't even mention Jonas Valanciunas, who's been phenomenal for them. I think he's one of the more underrated guys in the league, because when you talk Pelicans, he's the fourth guy, but he's a very good fourth guy for that team. So I think they have the starting 5, obviously, to do it. And whether guys like Trey Murphy or Jose Alvarado or Devontae Graham can give them what they need off the bench in order to last through the 82-game season, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, the standings right now, obviously, it's super early, so the standings are a mishmash. I mean, looking at the standings right now, which team I think is going to rise up from where they are, the Warriors are 3-7, sitting at 13th in the West, so obviously they're going to rise up from where they are. But yeah, the Pelicans, 7th, I think they're better than 7th in the West, for sure. I think they're going to end up being higher. So, yes.
Okay, yeah, I'm with y'all, too. I do think the Pelicans will go up the standings. I'm with you, with both of y'all, especially the point about the Jazz again. It's cool to see Markin. It's cool to see the Jazz play this well. The Blazers, I'm a little confused why they're playing so well. I just don't, I don't think that's sustainable at all. You know, they're going to probably fall to like 10th or something. It's my guess at the end of the season. But in Utah, like I said, I don't think that's sustainable. But I guess I'll just transition into one of my favorite things, unless you want anything else about the Pelicans.
No, go for it.
Go for it.
Yeah, I'm – do I think Utah's sustainable? No, I don't think they're going to last. They're not going to be a top – they're not going to get home court in the Western Conference. They're probably going to – they might not even get – they're probably going to be a play-in tournament team at best. But it's been really fun to watch them play basketball. It's been one of my favorite aspects about the NBA so far. I covered the Grizzlies-Jazz game just a few nights ago for SB Nation, and the Jazz just ran the Grizzlies out of the gym. Like, it really was not a real competition. Yes, there was no Desmond Bane, so Memphis had just negative floor spacing on the basketball court. But at the same time, the Jazz just play with so much intensity, with so much pace. They speed you up, but they also can play half court at the same time. They're so versatile on the defensive end of the ball, with Markkanen, Olynyk, I miss Jared Vanderbilt, and you have Walker Kessler coming off the bench when he's healthy. They have so many good bigs that are switchable and versatile, who can also, on the offensive side, shoot, play make, finish at the rim. They're very versatile guys on both sides of the floor, and it's been really tough for teams, as evidence of them being 7-3, second in the Western Conference. It's been really hard for teams to understand how to play against the Jazz. And will the NBA figure it out as the season goes along? Yes. But right now it's been hard, as evidenced by them being 7-3. And it's been cool. It's been cool to watch this team play basketball. Lauri Markkanen's having a career year. I was pretty high on him coming out of Arizona, and he's obviously had a disappointing few seasons, but I'm really happy to see him play really, really good basketball. I quietly think that if Utah starts to tank, like truly starts to tank, and if for whatever reason, not saying he would be available, but if for whatever reason he were available on the trade market, I'd be intrigued as a Grizzlies fan. I don't know off the top of my head how the salaries would match, but I would be intrigued if he were out there. So, because he would do a lot of things that the Grizzlies would love to have to compliment Jaren Jackson Jr. So, yeah, just a thought. I really like the Utah Jazz. They're one of my favorite teams that I've watched so far this NBA season. Well, is it sustainable? No, but it's still really cool to see him play ball at this high level.
Let me join this with one of my favorite things, and we can talk about them in tandem, because we talked about the Jazz and the Trailblazers as the two teams going to fall down the standings. You were more positive about the Jazz, and you had the Jazz one of your favorite things. I have the Trailblazers, one of my favorite things. First of all, I think the Jazz, if the Jazz make the play-in, they have failed. I think they need to tank 100%. They need to get rid of Mike Conley, probably get rid of Jordan Clarkson, get rid of all of their vets, Rudy Gay. They need to get rid of Kelly Olynyk for sure. Like, Kelly Olynyk should be a huge target for people right now. Everyone should want Kelly Olynyk. Every team that wants to be good should want Kelly Olynyk right now. So they make the play-in, they failed. The Trailblazers aren't necessarily going for that sort of tank. They have Damian Lillard. They have a guy who, when he has been healthy this season, which obviously he's already had a minor injury, but when he's healthy this season, has looked like the Damian Lillard superstar of old, which we weren't really sure about coming in. But I just, like, coming into the season, I was really intrigued by this roster. It was a rare moment for me that happened in the offseason where I, like, fully disagreed with Zach Lowe on something, where he called the Trailblazers roster blah, was not interested by this team at all. I looked at this roster and was like, this is exactly what they've been trying to put around Dame and CJ for years, but have failed to do for years. If this was 5 years ago, like, this would be a top five team in the West. Obviously, it's not that now. This is 5 years. This is the current day, the present. So the West is a lot deeper. They're not going to be, you know, a contender or a top five team in the West. But I just like this team a lot. Like, I think Dame is Dame. Anfernee Simons has taken yet another little mini leap. Jeremy Grant has fit perfectly as the third guy, as someone in between the Pistons version and the pre-Pistons version of
the Nuggets
and OKC version of Jeremy Grant. He's shooting like 60% of his twos right now are assisted. That's up from like 50% last year with the Pistons. And previously he was around like 75% of his twos assisted before he was with the Pistons. So somewhere in the middle there, really liked that like soft spot he's found there. Love Josh Hart. Like, he's just a perfect little like fifth guy for them. He's averaging almost 9 rebounds per game, shooting 42% from three. Nurkic right now is shooting 60% from three. That's unsustainable, obviously, but he's having a good season. I like the Trailblazers a lot. Like what the Jazz are doing too. Like, not to put down, I agree. Like, this is interesting and fun to watch what the Jazz are doing, but I think they need to put an end to it. Danny Ainge needs to put an end to it as soon as possible. Because there is like, and we're going to talk about obviously Wimby later, but there's like no other year that they need to tank other than this one. The Trailblazers aren't in that mode. They're just kind of in like, hey, let's be like fun and good. I didn't even mention Shaedon Sharpe, who has looked more ready than expected. And is obviously a super big talent. So I like the Trailblazers team. I don't think they're going to do anything special or anything, but I just like this team.
Every year there's that one team that comes flying out of the gate that you know isn't good, but like they just win like 7 of their first 10. Last year was Washington. Remember when the Wizards got out to that hot start last year and everyone's like,
oh, we know Connor was insufferable.
Bradley Beal, like, oh my goodness. Like, he's, and then of course they completely fell off.
Yeah, Kyle Kuzma. Yeah,
that's where Utah is right now, and I agree 100% with what Grant said, because we know Danny Ainge is ruthless, and he's looking at this like, "What the hell are we doing, guys? We want to be like 3-7." He would probably be upset with this team.
Yeah,
and I don't know if Markkanen's a guy that they move, because I think he's a good younger piece that they can use moving forward. I don't think Sexton's that guy, but. If you're looking at Olynyk that we already mentioned, Mike Conley, we're looking at Jordan Clarkson, what are these guys still doing in Utah?
Right.
Especially like Jordan Clarkson, to me, I'm looking at some of these teams in the that are contenders in the West and East, and it's like, why wouldn't we want this guy? Maybe we don't have that depth and we need that guy off the bench to just score 15 to 18 points a game, and that fits the bill. Like, Jordan Clarkson's starting every game for Utah. He's supposed to be six-man Jordan Clarkson, not starting on a team. So I agree that I think there's going to be moves made. Maybe some questionable rotations for us fans, but in the grander scheme of things, we realize, oh, okay, so the tankathon is really on here. I agree on the Portland point as well, because they're kind of in no man's land right now. Lillard is all about loyalty and sticking around, but What does that get you? It doesn't get you anything because you're going to consistently be best case scenario the 8, worst case scenario the 12, which is just not the place that you want to be in the NBA. And some of these teams hang around there for way too long, and I think Portland's that team now. And until they get out from under Lillard, then they're always going to be there because he alone is going to win you, what, an additional 8 to 10 games a year? When you would prefer to be winning 20 to 25, he's going to get you to 35 wins, and you're like, damn it, Dame. Like, stop it. Stop cooking people in the fourth quarter. Yeah. We need you to be better than that. And I do like some of their younger pieces. I like that they paid Simons in the summer. I like Josh Hart a lot. Still don't know why Nurkic is there. To me, he's a guy as well that I would just be like, just move him because he's helping us win too much. Because I want Portland to tank. I want them to go through a real rebuild. And as great as the loyalty thing is for Dame, I just don't think that from a franchise perspective, what they're doing right now makes any sense. Because is Lillard really selling that many more season tickets for you to be, what, the ninth team in the West? Or should you just finally embrace it and say, you know what, we could get an absolute haul for Damian Lillard right now? Because what does Damian Lillard command? When we look at what happened in the summertime with some of the picks that were exchanged for players, you're telling me that Portland couldn't go out and get four firsts for a guy like Lillard? And that would help them much more.
Sorry to cut you off, Kenneth, but the question is who would want to trade for Dame in the NBA right now? Like, do you have like teams off the top of your head? I'm trying to look at standings to see like who would – what it would have to be a contender or at least a team trying to contend. Mm-hmm. That would want to trade for Dame. I mean, just looking at this, just glancing the standings, it's hard to find a team that maybe Miami would love to have Damian Lillard right now, which would be a massive upgrade over Kyle Lowry. Miami's off to not a good start at all this season. Miami
would be
one. Down the list.
Because Miami, they got to be looking at their situation right now and saying, well, just – first of all, they're struggling out of the gate as well, so that doesn't help that they're 4-6. But
right,
we don't consider Miami beating any of the top teams in the East, do we? We consider them a team that they play hard. They're going to be a tough out, but do we actually see Miami if they play a healthy Bucks team? Do we see them beating the Bucks?
I never doubt Miami. I never doubt Miami and Jimmy Butler.
I doubt Miami.
Like, why? What are they?
I don't doubt Miami can go and beat some of these teams that have like dysfunctional issues. Like, they could beat a Brooklyn, they could beat a Philly, they could beat teams like that. Maybe a Toronto, because I just think Miami probably is the best player in that series. But I don't know. I just look at Portland, to stay on the Portland point. I just think that the fact that he's just hanging around there, and a team isn't – they got to get something for him, because what are we going to have? Damian Lillard there for the next 4 years. They never do well enough to be in contention. They're going to constantly draft around the 10 spot, which is a tough spot to draft from because you miss out on all the top-end guys, and if you don't trust your scouting department to go out and find you a stud at that spot, then I just think that they're stuck in no man's land. So I'd rather that – you know, they try and trade him to a team that maybe it's a Chicago Bulls. Maybe Chicago says, you know what, we need something. We need a third guy. And obviously Lillard wouldn't be the third option in that scenario.
But you
could trade some young pieces away and go and get Damian Lillard with some picks and, you know, not be content on being okay with LaVine and DeRozan. But
yeah,
I was thinking.
Let me throw another team out. What about the Nuggets? You think the Nuggets would consider that?
Trade Jamal Murray?
Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. or both. Maybe Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. for Dame and like another piece or something, like Jeremy Grant or something. I guess he doesn't fit with Aaron Gordon that well, but there's something that happened there.
Because the thing about that, the reason why he would fit well in Denver is that he's never been a distributor first, and Jokic can be that distributor, and then Lillard can just... because he's better Jamal Murray.
Like, yeah, exactly.
That's what it is. It's a massive upgrade. Murray loves to go off some games and drop like 20 in the fourth, and Lillard can do that more consistently. So I agree that would be a good fit for them. Even if it's just Jamal Murray, you throw in a bench player maybe it ends up being someone like a Bones Highland or somebody, and then you throw in three or four first round picks. Do you take advantage of the fact that you have the back-to-back MVP, get a second guy alongside him, you hang on to Michael Porter Jr. to be the third, and then we start looking at Denver as maybe they could come out of the West? Because I don't think anyone thinks that Denver's coming out of the West with the group that they have.
Yeah, I think as uncertain as we are about like Michael Porter Jr. and his health right now, and Jamal Murray hasn't looked, you know, quite the same coming back. I'm sure he'll get better. But I don't think we're feeling as strongly about the Nuggets as we did 2 years ago before those injuries happened. So I could see them wanting to kind of jump on the having Jokic right now and not waste like any more of his prime, you know, trying to make a real deep run.
And, you know, we're talking about Portland, but I don't think that they're going to go out and do this. I think that they're so loyal to Dame that they're just going to keep him and, you know, hang on to him probably too long and then not get enough back for him. But that's just what I would do right now, and I don't know if Portland's prepared to do it.
Yeah, I think those are all good points. I think the Nuggets thing is interesting. If Denver can hang on to Michael Porter Jr. in that trade, then I think I'm all in for that. I would do it in a heartbeat. I would trade Bones, Jamal Murray, picks, maybe another guy. Like, they just drafted Christian Braun from Kansas. Like, maybe, I don't know what his value is in the NBA. But no, if that's an actual realistic trade that's possible, I would do it right now if I'm Denver. I still like them a lot. I'm higher on Denver than both of y'all. I still think they're a very, very good team. I picked them to finish first in the West this year. So I still have a lot of faith in this team. And I do have faith that Jamal Murray will improve, but, you know, different tangent.
What for you is faith in Denver, though? Is it regular season faith, or is it that they could go and win the Western Conference this year?
I think they can win the West. Yeah, okay. I really think they can win the Western Conference. Because, like, looking at the West right now, I still don't like Phoenix that much. I know they're first right now. They're 7-2. I don't like Phoenix. I didn't like Phoenix last year. We all know this. I've talked a lot of crap about the Suns. No, hard pass. So besides that, then we look at the Clippers. They're 5-4. What the hell is happening with Kawhi Leonard? Paul George also gets hurt a crap ton of times. What's going on there? You know, that you'll need a consistent Kawhi Leonard to not just have a good regular season team, but to have a good playoff team. And if Kawhi, something happens to him, the Clippers are back to being what they were last season. Something happens to Paul George, which things unfortunately do, injury-wise, happen to Paul George. Like, I don't fully trust them either. And then the Warriors, they look like they're bad right now. Will they get better? Yes, I think they'll get better. But there are legitimate issues with that basketball team that need to be fixed. There are legitimate problems. Klay Thompson looks like a shell of himself. He does not look the same. Nearly as good as we would hope he would look right now. Draymond Green looks to be a step or two slower than he used to be, and that's a big problem for Draymond Green, because if he's not playing at peak Draymond, he can be a liability for the Warriors, because he can't score, and if he can't defend or rebound, then what's the purpose of Draymond Green? Like, it's a legitimate question. Yeah. I'm not even trying to throw shade at Draymond. And the Lakers, well, we know. Sorry, Kenneth, I'm not even going to elaborate on what's wrong with the Lakers.
It's bad.
So, like, looking at the West, it's Denver is still the most complete team in the Western Conference, and I think that'll continue for the rest of the season. I think they have a legitimate chance. This is their best chance to come out the West.
I will say this much: the fact that Golden State has struggled as much as they have out of the gate, you should feel more confident in Denver now than probably even heading into the season, because I think everyone assumes that the West runs through Golden State, but the fact that they're defensively one of the worst teams in basketball, like, they're giving up 130 points to teams like Orlando. That is disastrous out of the gate. Now, we know that they can fix it. This could just be a team that got out to a slow start, or is it a team that, you know, maybe there's a little bit more to that Jordan Poole Draymond situation in the summertime than they're letting on, and, you know, there might be some fractures within the group. So I would feel better about Denver now than preseason, just with how the West is sitting.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, to go back to your Dame point, I think it's just a matter of who has the pieces to trade for him. I think the teams that we mentioned are probably the best options: Miami, Denver, maybe the Clippers would be able to trade for Damian Lillard. They don't have a lot of their picks because they trade a lot of it to OKC, but they have some. But I don't, they may not have enough like back end talent to support a trade for Dame. So probably not, it's probably not on the table really. But yeah, I agree with the point that Dame should leave and Portland should try and get a bigger haul for him, but it's who has the haul, who would want Damian Lillard? Those are the bigger questions, I think. But it's definitely a fair point. Grant, so for you in Portland, where do you think Portland, because again, we didn't talk about them in the most interesting teams, but where would you have them at the end of the season? They're not, you probably don't think they'll finish fourth, but do you think they're a legit playing team?
I mean, I think coming into the season, like ninth or 10th is where they projected. So if I'm probably going to be a little more optimistic about that now. So 7th or 8th looks like where they're headed for.
Kenneth, what is another favorite thing for you in the NBA season so far?
I love this Cleveland team so much. I think that they're,
thank God.
I think that they're a team that just everyone can root for. Mm. Because they did it the right way. They went through the draft. Even like Sexton's not there anymore, but they drafted well with Sexton to a point where they could use him to acquire a guy like a Donovan Mitchell. And Cleveland historically has not been that team that goes and makes that splash trade in the summer where we're like, wow, the Cavs just made a great move. And so you look at this, just this overall makeup of the roster, Evan Mobley, a very likable second year guy, would have been rookie of the year last year had he not missed some time. Obviously it goes to Barnes because of that. Jared Allen, who is a first-time All-Star last year, he's been one of my favorite players in the league since he was in Brooklyn. It felt like they were throwing him in trades like he wasn't a valuable asset, and it's like you look at the potential here. This is a double-double guy that's a rim protector, and I just think he's been great. Darius Garland as well. Donovan Mitchell's playing at an MVP caliber level right now. And so I think you can just root for Cleveland. The fact that Kevin Love is still there, I think, is a bit surprising.
It's amazing.
When he got paid after LeBron left, I thought, oh, wow, this is a bad contract, and he's just going to be just sell a couple tickets for the franchise. So I love this Cleveland team. I think that they're heading in the right direction. I still think that they could make another move as well, but they're long. They're a good defensive team. They shoot the three well. And that's scary in the East this year.
Question is, before Francis, I'll let you go before, because I know you're itching to talk about the Cavs. Is Jared Allen rich man's Robin Lopez? I just thought of this comparison. is that an apt way to describe him?
I think he's that's better funny. Than Lopez.
I mean, rich man, like very rich man Robin Lopez.
Yes, a very rich man's
that's
Robin
Lopez. But I'm saying, like, that's the type of player. He's like an all-star who also has like Robin Lopez's. I don't know, team mentality and willingness just to kind of do the dirty work. I don't know.
To me, he's a glue guy. He's a glue guy for this team where, like, what he's averaging right now, he's sitting at 13-11, shooting 57%. He doesn't shoot threes. I don't think he's ever going to shoot threes in his career, and that's completely fine because when you look at what this team needs, that he kind of fits that role really well. So I would say a very rich man's Robin Lopez.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Slightly better hair too, because when he had the fro, like, I think his fro is better than whatever we call what Robin Lopez had on the top of his
head. They're comparable though. Those are comparable hairstyles for sure.
Comparable hairstyle.
Yeah. Sure. All right, Francis, go ahead.
Before I continue, I heard an echo for a second earlier. I don't hear it now. And I'll just edit this out. But I heard an echo earlier.
Uh-oh.
I haven't heard it. I don't know.
Okay. I don't hear it now, so that's a positive, because I'm talking. Like, I laughed, and then I said something about – I made, like, a slight comment to Kenneth's thing, and I heard myself again. I was like, oh, that's weird. Oh, it happened again. But now I don't hear it. I'll just edit this out.
Okay.
Yeah, I love this Cleveland Cavaliers team. It's – look, okay, let me get on my soapbox here just for a quick moment. And just toot my horn and say to everybody who doubted my Cavs finishing third in the East prediction, they can stuff it. Like, they can absolutely stuff it. This is a great basketball team. And I just to, I guess, reiterate the points that I made before, this starting five, to me, and I think to a lot of the NBA, to a lot of NBA fans now, especially after seeing 10 games of basketball from him, it doesn't really have a flaw. Because on offense, who are you going to guard? Who are you going to pay all your attention to, especially when you have a healthy Darius Garland? Who are you guarding? Who are you paying attention to? Who are you focusing on? Who are you trying to stop? Because if you give all your attention to Garland, well, there's a guy named Donovan Mitchell there. Okay, you give your attention to Donovan Mitchell. Then there's Garland. Then there's Evan Mobley. Oh, wait, now we got to stop Evan Mobley. But then it leaves people on the perimeter open. And Caris LeVert's having a decent season so far, too. Like, this offensive starting five is terrifying to defend. It's absolutely terrifying. And then on defense, which is the side of the ball most people were concerned about, I was the one stating, why are we concerned about the defensive side of the ball? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me either, because you have rim protectors in Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, two guys who are insane, absolutely insane help defenders at the rim, and two guys who can, who, if one guy makes a mistake, the other guy can erase that mistake in a heartbeat. There's a great YouTube video put out by Ben Taylor, the Thinking Basketball guy, talking about how good they are, how good Evan Mobley and Jared Allen are on defense, and how they're an incredible 1-2 punch at the rim. Because if Evan Mobley's in the wrong position and he gets caught out in a defending a pick and roll, Jared Allen comes off his man and is the help defender at the rim and just stuffs that guy at the rim. And then Evan Mobley does the same thing if Jared Allen's caught out when he's trying to defend an action or defend a pick and roll. And Evan Mobley makes up for Jared Allen being in the wrong spot. It is absolutely mind-numbing to think about how to score on this team and how to defend this team. And the depth, like we talked, I talked about the, I'm not super concerned about their depth either, because like Ricky Rubio hasn't come back yet, but Kevin Love is just raining threes from the parking lot of that stadium. What is the name of their stadium? Is it still Quicken the Quicken Loans Arena? It can't be. It's still the Quicken Loans Arena?
Yeah, I think it's still Quicken Loans.
Wow. Wow, that's shocking to me. But anyway, so
Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
Rocket
wow.
Mortgage.
Is it the same building?
Rocket Mortgage.
Yeah. Name and rights.
It's probably the same building. Wow.
That's such okay. a big name change. Rocket. The field house from the arena, that's just a big name change. All right. Anyways, go on.
I agree. Sorry. Okay. From the Rocket Mortgage
field house.
yeah, field house. Kevin Love is raiding through from out there. And there's like...
Oh, I'm Quicken Loans changed its name to Rocket Mortgage. That's why. Okay. Anyways, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But it did go from an arena to a field house.
To a field house, yeah.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah, Kevin Love has been playing good basketball. Chetty Osman is a good glue guy off the bench. Dean Wade, just all he does is shoot threes. Isaac Okoro can defend as well. And we don't have a healthy Ricky Rubio yet, which I think he'll make a legitimate difference coming off that bench and adds another layer that'll make things hard for teams to defend. This is a really good basketball team. They're first in net rating, and it's not like... Like, they're really good, and I never really understood the doubt for this team. Like, now, do I think they're world beaters and going to win the NBA title? No, because I still think Milwaukee's better. I still have Boston and Milwaukee over Cleveland. But this is a damn good basketball team, and I'm just going to sit on this pod and say, I told you so to to the people who weren't fully on the bandwagon with me.
All right.
This is a great basketball team.
Francis, I want to put out a challenge to you. Because if you are the Cleveland guy now, you've now solidified that, yes, you're a Memphis Grizzlies fan, but like your East team is Cleveland this year. The challenge for you is by the next episode of your show, you have to come up with a new nickname for Dean Wade. Because I am so sick and tired of every time I turn on a Cleveland game, they call him D-Wade. Because there is only one D-Wade.
Oh, what?
They call him D-Wade all the time when I would tune into Cleveland games. So your challenge is to come up with a nickname for Dean Wade moving forward.
All right, deal.
Because it doesn't feel right that they're calling out D Wade, and then you look and it's like, no, it's just not.
Yeah. It's so weird that like I still associate Dwayne Wade with the Cavs at all when he was there so briefly. But like when you talk about D Wade on the Cavs, like I still think of Dwayne Wade over Dean Wade.
You're expecting Dwayne Wade to be in a Cavs uniform. Yeah. And it's odd. So because you are on your soapbox talking about Cleveland, you now must, as the Eastern Conference Cleveland representative, come up with a new nickname for D-Wade.
Okay, deal. Theo, I'm sending y'all a message in the chat just because he looks so much like Chandler Parsons in this picture.
Wow.
It's like absolutely insane how much he looks
like. I feel like this is going to be a Francis thinks. I think this is going to be a Francis thinks all white guys look the same type of deal.
Not all of us look like Chandler Parsons.
Well, if you all did, that would probably be better for y'all. He's an attractive guy. That probably would be a plus. Like, wouldn't you wish more people looked like Chandler Parsons, I guess? Mm. Anyway, all right. I will get a nickname for Dean Wade the next time I'm on this podcast.
Does this mean you've sold all your Hawks stock and bought Cavs
stock? I sold my Hawks stock. Okay. 100%. I've sold my Hawks stock. I am out on the – well, they've been like a little bit better than we thought they would be this year. But, yeah, I'm out on the Hawks. I sold – probably too late. I held on to Hawks stock too late. Yeah. I should have sold after they made the Eastern Conference final. So I'm trying to buy like half a share of the Cavs.
Yeah.
Like at this point, like half shares, and hoping that it'll still help me balloon. But so far, return on investment is looking solid. What are you thinking, Grant?
Yeah. So I did not have the Cavs. One of my favorite things, not because I've been anti the Cavs this year, but mostly because this list kind of just turned into things I was right about. And I was wrong about the Cavs. So kudos to you, Francis. I thought they would be, you know, closer to the play-in. And they don't seem like they're gonna be that at all. Best net rating in the league right now, +12. Darius Garland's obviously only played two games. Evan Mobley has not taken the leap we were all expecting as of yet. So we could still see that coming sometime in the future. And I think they still really need to lock down their long-term three spot. Caris LeVert has played really good defense, has shot really well from three, 46% from three, and like 28% from two. Yeah. So he's shooting like 36% from the field despite shooting 46% from three. That's an unbelievable statistic.
That's hilarious.
He would be much better served coming off the bench. So they need to lock that down. I think they'd be a great Jay Crowder landing spot, at least as like a stopgap for that spot. He can make a return to the Cavs. The one thing on that note also that would really haunt me at this point, and that I also talked about when the Donovan Mitchell trade happened, was including Ochai Agbaji in that trade. I would have really, if I was them, I would really push to replace Okoro or replace Agbaji with Okoro in that trade and see if we can make that happen. Mm-hmm. Maybe include another protected pick or something. I would have really just wanted to hang on to Ochai Agbaji. I think he would fit really well in that three spot for them. But yeah, I mean, they've looked great. Donovan Mitchell is an MVP candidate. And I think they only have up to go from here. So they're going to be scary.
Yeah. Yep. This is a really good basketball team. Grant, what about you? Your favorite, another one of your favorite things for the NBA season?
I don't have a big one. I have a list of honorable mentions that I can run through real quick if you'd like to hear that.
Do it.
All right. First of all, and a lot of this is like stuff I was right about, so just get prepared for that. Devin Fassell is the best wing in the 2020 draft, and it isn't even close. He's been a stud. The massive lineups in Orlando and Toronto have been really fun. Just crazy weird lineups. We saw that from Toronto last year. Orlando is really, really dipping their toes. Bobo's been crazy. He was the forgotten man during the past few years because of injuries, but he's looked really good. Is Christian Wood like an all-star playing 25 minutes a game right now? What are the Mavs doing? Why are they not playing him 30 plus minutes a game? I don't understand.
Me neither. I was actually going to ask you that. I really don't know.
Okay.
Personally.
Do you have more that you want to touch on with that or no?
No, it just I liked Christian Wood on the Mavs like going into the year. I actually thought the fit was pretty decent. But when we saw that he was going to come off the bench, I think we were all a little confused.
Yeah.
Not just like us, but I think all NBA fans were like, wait, who's going to be coming off? The guy you just traded for to be like the another like legit second or maybe at worst third guy next to Luka is now going to come off your bench? Like what are we doing right now?
It's not like they have a lot of guys that like are causing him to be on the bench. Like I like Maxi Kleber, but like he's not like Maxi Kleber is not some crazy stud. JaVale McGee is their starting center. It's not like they have someone that's pushing him to the bench. It's just they're like choosing.
Yeah,
they don't have like a deep roster or a very talented roster, and he's their second best player to me pretty clearly. So I just would start. I don't know, even if you're not starting him, I would play him 30 plus minutes. I think they're miss. That's a missed opportunity there.
It's just weird.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense. And
then to turn towards the hometown a little bit here, the defense of Jake Laravia and Santi Aldama both have impressed me a lot on that side of the ball.
Yeah.
And then also Mikey Williams committed to. Oh wait, sorry. How'd that get in here? My bad. That's college basketball. No, excuse me.
That's your Memphis.
That was my Memphis joke.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
Good. Thank you. Yeah. Shout out to Mikey Williams.
I wasn't expecting that Devin Vassell one either. I really was not expecting
that. Yeah, me neither.
He's going.
Yeah.
I was huge on him coming in the draft. Thought he was better than Okoro and better than Patrick Williams, and he's averaging like 21 a game right now. I'm a big Devin Vassell fan.
I love Sadiq Bey.
Sadiq Bey is good
a
too.
Wing from that draft, like
Sadiq Bey might have been second better. Best. Sadiq Bey might have second best ahead of Patrick Williams because Patrick Williams has done like nothing this year.
Yeah,
nothing.
I always thought that was a weird draft pick in general for Chicago. So yeah, I'll agree that. I think Devin Vassell is better than Sadiq Bey. I'm not going to say that he is light years ahead of Sadiq, but I will give you your props for being in on Devin Vassell in 2020.
Okay.
It could be worse. Nice. You could be Chris LeBron, who was all in on Killian Hayes in the NBA draft.
Oh God. At least
I'm not kidding. I went back. I found his draft board, and Killian Hayes was number one on his draft board.
Oh
year,
man,
so.
Him and KOC. At least I hope he's at least given that up by now. KOC has not given that up yet.
Yeah,
I don't get it. Send him to the G League and tell him to learn how to shoot.
Yeah, so,
it's bad.
Oh man, that's tough, Chris. Sorry, man. Chris is catching strays on this podcast. Yeah, that's tough, man. Sorry about that, bro. Kenneth, do you have a last favorite?
I'll be honest. The Lakers have kind of sucked the will out of me to be excited for other teams because it's just so bad. I guess it's a positive that Russell Westbrook looks okay off the bench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where he should have been from the outset because it just does all not right. work to have no shooting at all.
Yeah.
Your starting lineup. So I guess that's right. The silver lining because I was on the train of send Russ home and just like pay him to not be a part of the team this year. But him coming off the bench has been positive for the last number of games. He attacks the basket a lot more and he gets guys involved. And when he's in the starting lineup, it's LeBron wants to slow it down. And it's so clunky the way that they do offense when he's out there. And then you throw Russ in there who's like, give me the ball. And then he does, and it's usually like late in the shot clock or he then has to go and make a play in the half court, which I don't think is Russ's strength. So I think it works from that perspective. Don't get me wrong. The Lakers are still a bad basketball team. That's not going to change anytime soon. When you have Matt Ryan playing on your team and somehow he's better than NFL Matt Ryan. I don't know how that he's even pulling that off. It's more so an indictment on NFL Matt Ryan, but I think it's a bad basketball team that I don't see getting any better. And that's fine. Unfortunately, we don't get that draft pick this year, but we won a title in 2020. So congrats, LA.
Yeah. Russell. I don't know if the Russell Westbrook move is going to make much of an impact on the Lakers this season, but it does make a little bit of impact on him. Maybe at least showing that he can accept that role, because before he was just showing like no desire to do it. I was thinking like if he gets traded and someone buys him out, is anyone even going to want to sign him for the minimum with him like being such a like an issue, not wanting to come off the bench, like wanting to be a starter, still wanting to be the guy, like not accepting that at all, and like clearly not being valuable as a starter at all. So at least this at least like maybe restores a slight bit of his value where he could get bought out now and maybe
it restores the possibility of him being in the NBA past like 2024.
Right, exactly.
Is what it does.
Exactly.
Hopefully not in the Lakers.
Yeah, I don't have too much else to say about the Lakers. I don't really want to talk too much about them.
They're just so bad, and I know that. What's so frustrating is that I'm content on them being bad. It's like, whatever, this is the way that it is. But when you cannot turn on the TV without them lamenting how bad the Lakers are every single morning on ESPN, it's like, you're beating a dead horse. We're already dead. You don't have to keep going with this.
Yeah.
We're a bad team. It's not going to change. the only bright point for the Lakers this year will be the fact that LeBron will be the all-time leading scorer in NBA history, and that's it. There's nothing else to get excited about, and again, congrats on winning our title a couple years ago, because that was a long time ago.
Yeah, feels like I'm forever. Gonna see
it does.
It does. It's wild. It feels like forever. It feels like forever, and but at sometimes it feels like it was yesterday, because COVID feels like it's okay. Not going down a tangent. Anywho, I'm gonna see another close friend of the pod and a close friend of mine. Chris Moore is a big Lakers fan. Seeing him on Monday, and I feel like the tone he's going to have is the same tone that you have right now, Kenneth, when talking about the Lakers. Just pure exasperation. Depression and just
it's not even excited. Depression though, because I came to terms with the fact that they were going to be bad before we even started the season, and then they start playing bad and everyone's acting surprised. It's like, what indication was there that it was going to be better? They didn't make any moves.
True.
Somehow their bench got worse, and it wasn't a good bench last year. So we're a bad basketball team. Remember when we had Montrezl Harrell, Kyle Kuzma, and KCP, and we traded all of that for Russell Westbrook? That was a thing that they did, and it kind of sewered the franchise. And that's just the way that it's going to be. No depression here. All good.
Fair.
There's too many other sports on that I can cheer for that I don't have to watch Lakers basketball.
That's true. Fair enough. That's very fair. All right, I'll close out this segment with my last favorite thing. And it's another – it's funny you said the grit. My last favorite thing is another thing I was bright about. Going into the year, is Desmond Bane just playing out of his skin. Like, he's been fantastic this year. 24 points a game, shooting 46.5% from three. His rebounding numbers are up. His assist numbers are up. He's just been fantastic. And again, not to harp too much on that Jazz blowout of the Grizzlies a few days ago, but that game is a perfect example of how vital Desmond Bane is to the team. Because without Desmond Bane, there's no spacing. You have to rely too much on Dylan Brooks, which he's way too up and down. You have to rely on John Conchar, which I like John Conchar.
Don't whoa. Don't say anything bad about John Conchar. Just skip over that point and go to your next point.
I'll skip it.
I will say I'll go. It's funny, this dynamic of you guys loving like a bench guy, that is the ultimate fandom thing. Because I feel like every fan base has that guy that probably the rest of the world is like, who? But you're like, I love that guy.
Don't you wish the Lakers had that guy?
I do. I don't know who to turn to right now. It's so bad.
Yeah. Hey, Matt Ryan. There you go. that's your answer. I'll skip Jitty. But yeah, Desmond Bane's so important to this team, and he's had a fantastic season. I said going into the year, a massive key for the Grizzlies will be Desmond Bane just taking more threes. He was 27th last year in three-point attempts. I want him top 10 this year. At the time of me tweeting my recap of my point before, he was 6th. Now he's 8th, but still he's top 10 in the NBA in three-point attempts. That's a huge, huge thing for the Grizzlies because last time I checked, three-point shots are worth 3 points. So he's up by two attempts, so 3 times 2 is 6. Last season he's averaged 18 points a game. This season he averages 24 points a game, and 24 minus 18 is 6. So I think that tracks.
Matt is actually, you're saying he makes both of the extra three-point attempts. He makes 2 of 2 for the extra three-point attempts. That's how that math would work out. I'm just not to absolutely completely deconstruct your point, but I get what you're saying. Go ahead.
Yes, it helps. It helps the fact that he's taken an offensive leap, that he's just purely taking more threes. It helps his offensive leap. You're right. He's also scoring better at the rim and all that good stuff. You're absolutely right. Thank you for fixing my math. That shows how I'm more of a Bijan than an Asian in reality. So
is Desmond Bane going to be an all-star this year?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, at this rate, he's playing like an all-NBA guy. Like, well, I'm not sure why he couldn't be an all-NBA guy at this rate. If he continues to average, like,
I think that he will as well, looking at the Western Conference. As long as the Grizzlies hang out in the top four, because it's tough to get a second guy in if you're not in that top four, I think that he'll be an all-star easily. So, I agree.
Yeah.
And there's no indication that Memphis should fall. They're a deep team with a superstar. Looks like a second all-star now as well. Like, I think that they're in a really good spot.
Yeah, he's a all-star level player. I haven't broken down how the all-star teams are shake out obviously yet. So
I know
hard to say for sure, but he is an all-star level player for sure and has taken that leap. Only thing I'll add, Francis, agree with everything. Only thing I'll add is, and you touched on the finishing slightly, but just his finishing looks much improved.
Much
better. I don't know how at like he's listed at 6'5". I think he's like 6'3.5". and with a maybe a negative wingspan, I don't know how he gets some of these shots off at the rim where he just kind of goes at guys and he's strong enough that he just shields them off just enough to get that ball up on the backboard without getting blocked. It's crazy. He's had some really tough finishes this year. But mostly I want to use my time here to go on a little rant about Dylan Brooks and Dylan Brooks fans in particular.
Oh boy.
Because I'm so sick of Dylan Brooks has been playing better lately. And you go on Twitter and you see the people who have been Dylan Brooks fans this whole time being like, man, y'all been hating on Dylan Brooks and now y'all love him. Like he had a quote, Dylan Brooks himself had a quote like that. You know, they hate you when you're down, they love you when you're up, whatever. Everyone's being like, yeah, we were right about Dylan Brooks. Look at him. And it's like, no, we were right about Dylan Brooks. We said if he would just play within the flow of the fucking offense and just take less bad shots and not ISO and just catch and shoot and just be within the offense, then he would be a good player. And guess what? That's exactly what he's doing, and he's a good player. So, like, we were right. You weren't right. Like, that's all we wanted was this exact player.
You just don't want Dylan Brooks to be taking 15, 20 shots a game. A lot of inefficient shots at that. You just want him to be in the free flow. Stop trying to be the second option when it's very clear that you are not the second option on this team.
I very, very hard tried to figure out a way to do this research early in the year on how often players shoot with zero passes in a possession happening. And I couldn't figure out a way to get that research done and then to correlate that to how good that player actually is. But Dylan Brooks would be at the whatever the bottom of that graph or whatever. He would be at the bottom right of that graph. Most shots per without a possession, and then like efficiency of those shots would be the lowest. Like the amount of times he just dribbles up and just goes ISO and just has complete tunnel vision is unbelievable. And he hasn't been doing that the past like 3-4 games. Congrats. Let's throw a parade for Dylan Brooks. Like, good job. You're doing exactly what we've wanted you to do. Francis, you haven't moved. Are you frozen? Oh my God, he is frozen. Oh my God.
I thought that he was just in shock.
He was just staring. It was such like a perfect stare.
Well, and Brooks has been, obviously everyone up here in Canada loves Dylan Brooks, and I've never been like the Dylan Brooks truther. I think that he's a solid NBA player that thinks at times like you that he is much better than what he is capable of. And it's got to be frustrating having that sort of player when you see the talent that you have in Memphis. It's very good and he kind of just ruins it sometimes. So
Francis, welcome back. We thought you were just staring like really intently.
it was perfectly frozen. I thought that you were in awe of what Grant was saying, and I was like, I love his rant too, but like,
yeah. Let me just also one last point on that graph I talked about earlier with the defensive versatility and then matchup toughness. Dylan Brooks was all the way to the right, most tough matchups this year of any, like the toughest matchups of anyone this year. So he takes on assignments, like he brings that energy, that level of toughness, and like props to him for that. But like, this is the offensive player we've wanted, and I'm excited. I'm hoping he can last. So not to completely just take over your Desmond Bane point, but I just wanted to completely take over your Desmond Bane point.
No, that's okay. My internet just decided to stop working. I don't know why, but anyway, I'm back, so that's good. I'll give you... Kenneth might know this, so because he's from Canada, Dylan Brooks is from Canada. I'll give each of you two guesses as to what city Dylan Brooks is from.
I know very few. Minnesota. Minnetonka, is that one?
Mississauga.
Mississauga.
The thing that people don't understand.
Wow, well done.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
But what people don't understand is that Mississauga is basically just Toronto.
Okay.
Because Toronto, it'd be like saying that like you're from New York, but you're from Brooklyn. You're from Queens.
Mm,
you're from,
right.
because they have Mississauga. You could say you're from Oakville. You could say there's a variety of places. So it's basically just like Toronto Light on the outskirts. So.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But Toronto doesn't have boroughs like New York does, right? It's just like a suburb of.
No, like Mississauga's classified as just like a separate city, but it's all the, they call it the Greater Toronto Area, and that's a part of
that.
So.
Okay, gotcha. Great, I was impressed. That was, Mississauga. There's no chance I would have gotten that right, man. There's literally,
I've seen that written down before, so I knew that had to be a good chance there.
Yeah, well done. That's impressive. All right, so let's move on to our last segment talking about Victor Wembanyama. Best landing spots for a guy who's just, I think we're running out of words on how to describe this man. The best way I put it is he's an alien. I've just never seen anything like this before. I sent Grant and Connor that clip of Wembanyama hitting that one-legged floater three after size up moves and just lulling his defender to sleep. Said, you know what, I'm gonna hit a one-legged floater from the three-point line. Like, what is happening?
I can't even imagine if he thought to do that before he did that, or if he was going into like just a hang dribble pull-up and then like the defender kind of got in his space, so he just like on the fly adjusted and shot it on one leg. Like, I have no idea what was going on in his head, but it was I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah,
there was like 7 seconds on the shot clock. It wasn't like a desperation heave. Like, it was like,
yeah,
it was just a size up in your face one leg three.
Like, hey, I worked on this in pregame.
Yeah.
It's like, why?
Yeah.
I don't understand. If this man stays healthy, which, knock on wood, knock on everything, but he stays healthy, Grant asked in our group chat, will Wembanyama be all NBA as a rookie? Yeah. Like, probably. Like, if he stays healthy, I don't see why he wouldn't be an all NBA guy as a rookie. He's insane. He's absolutely incredible. All right, landing spots. Grant, I'll start with you. Where would you love to see Victor Wembanyama?
Okay, I've got two top ones here. I think I'm gonna go with. I'm really excited about this one, so I'm gonna go with this one. I'm gonna go with the Rockets. So obviously, this one's fun. Rockets have a really good young roster already. They got Jalen Green. They got Jabari Smith. They have Alperen Sengun, and they have a good amount of role player pieces around those guys. So that would make a really good foundation there. But here is the other idea that makes it extremely interesting to me. And this is just something I came up with. Hasn't been thrown out there at all by anyone. I don't know if there's a possibility. Y'all might shoot this down. But Alperen Sengun so far has been a monster this season. He's averaging 23 points and 14 rebounds per 36 minutes. And I would fucking love the Wemby Sengun front court. That would be so much fun. What the Rockets desperately need is a franchise point guard. You know, they've been playing Kevin Porter Jr. / Jalen Green as their point guards, combo guards, shooting guards, whatever. So they need a franchise point guard to run the team, but one that's not going to really totally take the ball out of Jalen Green's hands. So here's my hypothetical. If you're the Rockets and you land the number one pick, would you consider trading Jabari Smith for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? And what would really make this perfect is if the Thunder got the second pick and therefore could draft Scoot and already had Shai's replacement in hand. Didn't need to worry about that. So they have Scoot, Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, ready to go, young team, build that over the next 3 years. The Rockets get Shai, Jalen Green, Wemby, Sengun, rest of the pieces around them. And you can throw in whatever, Jabari Smith, Kevin Porter, and a protected pick, or just Jabari Smith and protected pick, or whatever it needs to be. But I just really like Shai with the rest of this team, and I think that team would be ready pretty soon to be, like, very scary.
I don't think that it's out of the question, because they've already proven that they're completely content trading Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, which I think is absurd. I think it's absurd that they thought it in the first place, but why wouldn't they at this point, knowing that they're going to get a guy of that caliber? Yeah, I think it's possible. It'd be a wild draft night if that happened. I think that would be amazing, but yeah.
This is just, yeah. This
is...
Go ahead, Francis.
I was just going to compliment you. I love your not just trade thoughts, but you always have draft night trade thoughts, and then I love hearing them. You always have these plans for draft night trades, and it just makes me happy.
And none of them ever happen, but I wish they would.
That would be just, good God, it'd be fun. That would be so much fun. So Houston is at the top. Is Houston at the top of your excitement team?
For that reason, they're at the top. That's a complete hypothetical. So there'd probably be another one if that was out of the question. There'd probably be another one that I'd have ahead of them. But yes, for that reason, I have Houston top.
Gotcha. Okay, Kenneth, what about you?
I have two in mind, and there are two teams that I think just overall the way that they're currently constructed, I think Victor fits in best with them. The first one I would love, and it's the one that I really where I want him to go, is the Detroit Pistons. I really want him to go to the Pistons, and the reason why is so they already drafted Cade, who's the distributor. He looks like he's going to be future all-star down the road. I think they have good shooters. I like Bogdanovich. I like Sadiq Bey. I think that their front court is still a little bit unproven with Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren. And those guys are more so who you would want to play at the five. And I think a guy like Victor, you would almost want to play at the four anyways. So I really like – and what this does is you can move Bogdanovich or Bey to the bench to be your six-man scorer that comes in. I think it would more likely be – Bogdanovich that gets moved there, but I just really like the fit there because they're clearly trying to build around Cade, but then you throw in Wembanyama and you throw that out the window, and now Cade's your second option. You've got some solid pros on the wing. You've got a couple of guys to play the center spot. I just think he fits in really well day one with Detroit, and that's a team that we can watch grow up over the next couple years. And I really like Detroit as a basketball city as well. They're one of the better franchises in NBA history, and so I think this brings them back to prominence because they haven't been good since the Billups days. They had a couple of 8-seed years, but outside of that, they haven't really been anything special. And then the other one, I want to see him in Charlotte because I think the LaMelo Ball and Victor Wembanyama is just awesome for that franchise. Because we're talking about Detroit being one of the better franchises, in Charlotte is the complete opposite end of that spectrum. And there was a lot of excitement around LaMelo Ball, his rookie year and even year two a little bit. And now they're kind of just stuck. It feels like they're stuck with the group that they have. And a lot of that has to do with the Bridges situation. We won't get too much into that. But losing a guy like that who is having such a good young career is not great. And then you've got Rozier, you've got Hayward, you've got Oubre. But who's really that 4 or 5 that they have? They don't have that guy.
Of course.
I love Plumlee as much as the next person or PJ Washington, but I think he just fits really well with what Charlotte would want to do. And I think it maybe gets Charlotte to a point where they can start getting into the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, because it's a shame that we haven't seen LaMelo Ball in a playoff game yet. And I think getting Victor would go a long way in getting them there.
Yeah, let me go on this. Because the Hornets were my other top team. Obviously, that's out of greedy reasons because I live in Charlotte and want to see that happen very badly. that would be must-watch TV, LaMelo and Wemby. They've been looking for a franchise center for forever. They are like the longest time any franchise has been looking for a center. That's the Hornets. So he would be that and more. PJ Washington's a good fit next to him. The franchise, I think, really, like you touched on, just needs kind of a break, needs a little bit of luck because it just has not gotten any of it, especially recently. So I would be very excited to see that happen.
I agree. Actually, to piggyback again, like the Hornets were at the top of my list just because of the LaMelo Victor connection. That would be amazing. Again, I don't want to just reiterate what y'all said, so I mean I'm with y'all. I think Hornets would be a great fit for Wembanyama, especially like them as a realistic fit. You know, they're 3-7 right now. I think they had aspirations to be a play-in team, but it's not looking that strong, especially with LaMelo should be coming back soon, hopefully. But I it's not looking that promising. So, you know, maybe Charlotte goes into a full tank job this season. Who knows? But it's looking likely might be a strong word. It's looking very possible that they might just go full tank this season, especially looking at how they played this so far this year. So, yeah, I think that's a good, very good, fun, realistic fit for Victor. I still really like Oklahoma City as a fit just because you could run a starting five of Shea, Giddy, Chet, Victor, and hell, just put Pokuševski out there just for shits and giggles, and you have just an absolute behemoth of a starting five lineup. And Pokusman, you know, Grant, you called him a bust. I think that's a bit harsh for Poku. He was drafted, like, I think it was late first. I don't remember fully off the top of my head. So, I mean, he has still room to grow. He's shown legit flashes of being a good basketball player, and he's had an all right start to the season so far.
Poku is
he's
a poor man's Santi Aldama. That's all he is.
would that be the starting five in NBA history with the least amount of weight? Ooh. If you started that as a starting Ooh. Five.
Wow.
Oh wow.
With
Chet,
Shea, Giddy.
It would 100% be relative to height. It would be the lightest starting five.
It has to be the lightest, right?
I don't know if you're not including like a adjustment for height, because like Victor's still at 7'5", like it's gonna be fairly heavy.
But I think
there might be shorter.
Poku and Chet alone would have to help you out a ton.
Yeah.
It was just something that I thought, man, that's a team that just needs the weight room for 2 years.
Yeah.
Don't even play the game. Just put them.
Yeah, stop playing basketball. Just go eat a bunch of food. Just go to Cracker Barrel like four times a week.
They don't do shoot around. They just go to a buffet for 2 hours.
Yeah.
They're like, go for it.
Yeah.
We don't actually need
morning. I would love to be on.
We don't need morning shoot around because we're not trying to win anyways. We just need you all to gain four pounds.
Right. Yeah.
That's right. That's the. I would love to be on that basketball team. I don't know about y'all. I would love to be on that basketball team. It's like the opposite of the Zion Williamson thing. It's just like the inverse effect. Google says Victor's 209 pounds, which I don't think is. I think that's
like very light. Wise. It's very light.
That's light.
That's light. Then you throw in Chet, you throw in Poku, and then two guards. I think you might have it. I think you might have it at that point.
I agree. I think Chet's only 100. Damn, Chet's 190. Good lord. Goodness gracious, that's a skinny man. Yeah, Chet's 190. Yeah, I think there's a legit chance that they would hold the crown for that.
And Poku's only 210 as well, so your front court alone is averaging like 200 pounds.
Wow.
You throw in two
guards.
That's nuts.
That's nuts, especially thinking about where the NBA was like back in the day with the Twin Towers and everyone just so big. Like the big men were like big. They weren't just tall, but they were hunks of just – they were big people. That's a good shout. I think there's a legit chance of that.
Wait, you said that Chet was 195?
I saw 190.
Okay, so Shea Gilgeous is 195. That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's – good lord.
Not to really like drive home the fact that this team needs the weight room, but oh my goodness, that is insane.
Yeah.
The heaviest
Wait,
guy
they,
in
they
the
got, they got Lou
five
Dort, though.
Would be Josh Giddey at 216.
Okay.
So your average starting five is about 200 pounds.
If they were in a canoe, Dort's end would be like completely down and everyone else would be would be tipped.
Is that why they have to trade Dort? Because they're concerned that that team canoeing trip could mean sinking the ship.
Yeah.
their team banana boat ride.
Yeah.
It won't be the same. Oh my goodness. Well, on that lovely note, anything else about Victor and landing spots is all I got personally.
The last one I'll mention, the Spurs. Obviously, the handling of the Josh Primo situation, I'm rooting for this a little bit less, but you still, like, you can't really deny the intrigue of the Spurs landing a generational big man who's also happens to be international. And the roster has been super guard-heavy for years, so this would finally balance it out. They'd have Wimby, Keldon Johnson, Devin Vassell, and then Jeremy Sochan. Hopefully that's locking down four of their top five spots right there. still a franchise point guard away, really, to put things into place, and they'll need to fill their bench out significantly. You definitely trust the Spurs development system as well. So know that they're going to get the most out of Wemby. So it wouldn't be a bad place for him to go.
The thing about tanking this year too is that obviously everything's going to be about Victor, but Scoot Henderson right behind him is so good that you'll obviously be upset that you didn't get Victor.
I would still be very upset. I get Scoot as a normal number one prospect, but I would be upset if I got two. I would be pretty upset. I would be like, I was that close to a generational problem.
Yeah.
There's a gap there.
Oh, for sure. And to be clear, because I follow a lot of people who do the NBA draft related stuff, stop trying to be trendy by putting Scoot as the best prospect in this draft.
That's wild.
Say it. Do it, Kenneth.
Because everyone tried to do it with the Zion and Ja Morant situation. And guess what? They're both very good basketball players. So I don't think either team is upset that they drafted Zion or Ja. I think that there will be a bit more of a gap between what Victor is and what Scoot is. But, stop being the guy that says, oh, well, Scoot's still the best prospect in this draft.
That's crazy.
Talk to him.
You get fired if you draft Scoot number one.
Yeah.
You know what? Because your fan base, if it doesn't work out with Victor and he's a bust, you can live with the fact that you drafted the right guy. But if you pass on Victor for Scoot, and Scoot's pretty good, but then Victor goes on to be the LeBron James generational type guy that they're touting him to be, you get fired and you get made fun of for the remainder of existence. So stop being that guy.
Yeah.
Just say that Victor's really good and that he should go number one. Everyone, it's okay. I did that without saying a specific name, Francis. I hope that you know that. So
I was kind of hoping you would just say the name, but that's okay.
Drama.
That's okay.
Drama.
There's probably a 0.1% chance he listens to this podcast anyway. So you could just say the name. Your choice. Your life.
No, I'll keep the name out of it because he knows who he is, and he'll keep posting videos about how great Scoot is, and that's fine. I think Scoot's great as well. Everyone should think Scoot's great, but he's number two in this draft, and that's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Agreed. Deviate the conversation away slightly, international basketball down the line, probably 4 years, maybe the next Olympics. Well, the next Olympics is in what, 2 years? So maybe 2 years, I guess. If Victor plays for France, the Team USA versus Team France would just be must-watch television. You have to watch that game.
Killian Hayes incredible. Alone. I would watch just for him.
Killian Hayes leading that team.
Come on,
Francis. We all know that it's going to come down to the United States and Canada by that juncture. So forget about France. You guys got to.
If anyone ever plays for Canada, I feel like none of Canadian players ever play.
Grant, I have to say that is my biggest issue with why I hated Andrew Wiggins as long as I did, because everyone loves to tout that he's Canadian, but where are you when World Cup qualifying is, or when Olympic qualifiers are happening? Oh, I need the summer off. Well, you play for the Timberwolves, Timberwolves. Back when he was on the Timberwolves. So
you put in effort 20% of the games.
The majority of the season. Man. So, probably don't need that time off. You could use some time with Team Canada.
Oof. Yeah.
Now he's an NBA champion, so now everyone embraces him like they didn't say that up here for a long time. So people are forgetful really quickly.
Wow. The Up and Under podcast where no one's safe. Just no one's safe on this pod. Absolutely nobody. All right, well, Grant, Kenneth, that was fantastic. I'm always good to have both of y'all on. Grant, good to see you. Always hope you're doing well. Kenneth, record setting third time guest spot on the pod, so I hope we'll send you a plaque and you can put that up in your home that you hold the record so far. Kenneth, awesome, always glad to have you on. To everybody listening to the podcast, Kenneth, tell them where they can find you.
You can find me at the Competitive Hedge podcast Monday through Friday. I guess it's technically moving to 7 a.m. Eastern time now because of the clocks changing. Not that ours change here. We're in that one weird middle part of Canada where we didn't change our clocks. So definitely go and check out the show live every morning at 7 a.m. Eastern time.
Awesome, awesome. And you've been on a heater, right? Like on your betting, you've been positive for a while. At least that's what I remember.
Positive September, positive November, and already October and November as well. So going for three straight months.
Hey, then, so if you're trying to make money, which I'm sure all of us are, definitely go follow Kenneth at Competitive Hedge Podcast on Twitter. And Grant, again, always happy to see you. All the best to you as always. Kenneth, thank you so much for being here. To everybody listening, definitely be sure to comment, rate the podcast, give us 5 stars, subscribe to the podcast. And until next time, peace.
Cool days, hot tops, with my blue face, ice pops. I'ma make a shoelace, necklace. Yeah, we whipping pops on Lexus. And I'm skipping school days, mic drops. Eyes on summer like Cyclops. Yeah, we falling off the sidewalk. Mama, what's your homeboy?